Hi, this is Robert Carlyle, and I play Colquhoun and Ives. This scene was actually filmed on my birthday. This is the 14th of April, 1998. It's not that often you remember as an actor a specific date, but that was me celebrating my birthday lying there in the snow and the ice in Slovakia. What I was trying to go for here in this scene was to try and give a kind of almost Jesus-like image, which is apparent, I think, once you see it, but it's maybe too quick, that shot, to register. This is actually my favourite scene in the whole film. Jeremy Davis is a wonderful wee actor. He created a whole character from very, very little, Jeremy. Very little on the page.
My name's Colquhoun.
This was the first scene that I shot in the film.
F.W. Colquhoun.
Which was, it's nice because it's the introduction of the character, but it's also, it was a bit scary because there's about 6 pages of dialogue to follow. So there's an awful lot of pressure on just to kick-start the film. This is the obligatory Robert Carlyle arse shot.
Good Lord.
God knows why anybody would pay good money to see that, really. Whenever you say, "I suppose I owe you, gentlemen, a story," you really got sinking into the shot. We filmed the whole scene from this angle, and then a couple of other different angles. So there's a real sort of intake of breath because I knew that you were talking about 6 minutes of dialogue coming up here. Constantly refer back to the image of the cross, both with Colquhoun and Ives, and that seemed to me to be a part of Colquhoun's true past, even though this crucifix is actually taken from Mrs. MacCready. There's a shot coming up, I think, when you actually spot the crucifix in her hand. But it seemed to me as though Colquhoun is the realer of the two characters. And part of this story is probably true. So the whole purpose of that scene for me really was to try and create as believable a man as possible. There had to be absolutely no doubt that the man had suffered some terrible experiences. And obviously because of the way the other characters react, they totally buy it, they totally believe it, so it was very, very important for me to be as believable as possible there. It was a great experience working with the Native Americans, both Joe Running Fox and Sheila. I think they add a depth to the film. I think they give it a weight, a kind of, it gives it some kind of substance, I think.
White man eats the body of Jesus Christ every Sunday.
Absolutely. This was a very, very difficult scene to film because the whole thing's done on Steadicam and it's all one shot. So everything's kind of choreographed to kind of stop and centre around about this point. That was always a problem for me, this scene, because obviously Colquhoun has to go with him or the story can't continue, but it seemed to me be kind of, it was a difficult one to for the believability that he would recover so quickly and go after them. But I suppose you just have to present a picture of a man who's a good, good man who just wants to help. Picking things up like that. This was a night shoot, this sequence, I remember. And we would start probably about 4:30 in the afternoon. And I remember by the time it came to this scene, it was actually about 8:30 in the following morning. So that guy on the left, asleep there.
Fervent.
Is very nearly completely gone. That's the advantage of working with the director, that if you've worked a few times together, you can see, I'll just lie in the corner and pull the hat over my eyes and she'll let you do it, you know. Some of these snow goggles probably look really strange, but by the time we got to the top of the mountains, the glare from the snow was unbelievable. This scene coming up, and I played the whole scene with the glasses on, it actually looks quite quirky and quite nice, but there was just no way that I could take them off. Every time I took the glasses off, my eyes just closed completely. I think I'd get too accustomed to actually wearing them. It's one of those things sometimes happen by chance in film, and the glasses and that we've seen really work very well. It gives them the character a mystery. That was never really meant to be the intention, but it works quite well. This is back to the sequence I was speaking about before. So this all happened, it was all filmed in the one night in the tent. It took a long, long time, 16-hour day that one. Neil McDonough, who plays Reich, I think he has to be one of the most dedicated actors I think I've ever worked with. The guy was so intense about his work. but I think it comes across very well. The licking scene. When I read the script the first time through, that was one of the scenes that really appealed to me the most. I thought, this is a really, really strange movie. So from the rest of the movie until we reach the cave, I'm very much in Neil McDonough's hands here with this rope. I'm sure he was enjoying himself, yeah. It's a sequence which was cut from the finished print, which just after this, before this point, Neil McDonough's character Reich falls down a side of a mountain. Of course, he's attached to me by the rope, so in effect save his life by pulling him back up again. And I think this is the point where the film really begins to gather pace. The next sequence, from my own personal point of view, this is purely improvised. Everything that you see up to the moment of the shooting is improvised. It was very flat on the page, very blank. So what I was trying to do was to give it some kind of urgency and some kind of danger. And Damon Albarn took the music off from my own breathing in this scene. The breathing and the sounds that I make. Whenever you watch things back that you've performed in, obviously there are certain times that you get pleasure from it, but you're very much interpreting lines that are on a page. With this kind of sequence here, for me, there's no lines on the page, so I'm able to create something which is different from what is actually going on in the main action, and hopefully to support the rest of it. And it really begins to gather pace from a bit now. I think it's a fantastic set. This is all studio. The colours and the textures are excellent. Some really fantastic Native American sounds behind this as well. So this beat that's beginning here links directly to what's about to happen outside. So this breathing, what I was trying to do was to take it off a Toffler's song, and you hear that breathing being accompanied by the beat. Really good shots, these, I think. And the camera very, very close. And this is just crazy stuff, really. Don't know what I'm doing. I love this moment here, actually. It's a real sort of... That turn is the change in the character right there. And he transforms from Cahoon to Ives in that moment. I remember chasing him up this hill here. I actually caught him at one point. This is a retractable knife in my hand. I remember stabbing him in the ass with a retractable knife. It was very funny. So they couldn't actually use the shot because it looked too comical. I always thought it was a shame that Toffler went so soon in the film, because he was a lovely presence. And he ended up a snack. The location for this sequence here was one of the most beautiful I've ever seen. The drop from the cliff that I'm standing off there was probably about 150 feet straight down. It's stunning. Part of a national park in Slovakia. This next piece for myself, this is a kind of an homage to Halloween and Friday the 13th and all these kind of movies, and the bad guy just won't stay down, so there's a kind of mocking. Taking the piss, really. We shot this sequence about 3 times because of sun problems with the light, because it moved around very quickly over these mountains here. So we went back to this location 3 times to shoot this. I love that. These were Czechoslovakian stuntmen. I don't care what Guy Pearce says, these were definitely Czechoslovakian stuntmen. And they are the best in the world, without a doubt. I know that Steven Spielberg uses the Czech guys all the time. And most of these unfortunates that drowned jumping off the Titanic were Czech stuntmen also. This sequence is all shot in a pit that they dug in the ground, just in the outskirts of the forest. So poor guy was down there for about 10 days, I think, in total. I feel that Colquhoun Ives, he knows he's there. That's what I'm trying to play in this sequence, that he knows he's there, but he's toying with him, really. And he toys with him now for the rest of the movie. He knows he's in there. Great pain acting by guy there. It's not easy to do that. He did that very, very well. His body's actually getting pulled in by 2 guys and a wire. So it's not any kind of superhuman feat of strength but me there, really. That's a raw pork chop I'm eating. Believe it or not, a raw pork chop. Part of the sequence included a nightmare where Boyd sees Calhoun sitting there laughing at him. But that was trimmed out. This is where Antonia's strength as a director really comes in, because this sequence is really only about a guy lying in pain in a pit, but she manages to flash up these images to suggest that this is what's going on inside the guy's head. She's very good at that, Antonia. She can create quite an extraordinary depth out of very, very little. And this is my favourite bit of music. I love how this comes in as he starts to walk. It's a great example of everything working in sync. Great photography there. Lovely piece of acting in the middle, and the music just surrounding it. It's a thing of beauty. David Arquette, fantastic performance with David Arquette. He's got so little on the page, just a few lines, but he creates quite an amazing wee character. He'd something to go on in the fact that he had he smokes the marijuana, and he's always after peyote and all of that. But he created a lot more than that. He gives it a depth. John Spencer, who plays General Slauson, he does a very brave thing here as an actor. He's very New York, John Spencer, but he alters his voice sufficiently enough. It sounds like a kind of bad English accent, but that, of course, would have been probably spot on the way people would have sounded at that time, that kind of crossover between an English and an American tone. Sometimes it sounds like his lines go off. It's a very brave thing that he was doing.
This is Colonel Ives. Colonel, Captain Boyd.
Captain, how's the leg?
Surprise, surprise. But again, this is where the crucifix came from. This wasn't included in the script, but I just wanted to kind of continue that as a running theme, if you like. So there would be no doubt in Boyd's mind that it was the same guy, even though physically there's quite a change in terms of the makeup. It's always a lot easier playing Colonel Ives even from a makeup point of view, because obviously with Calhoun there was extensions in the hair and stuck on beard. The only piece of makeup on me at this point is a tiny little piece at the bottom of my chin, so I'm very proud of that moustache actually. Bill Brostrup at the back there, he definitely gets the medal for being the most patient actor in the world. He was out in Slovakia for as long as we were, for very few filming days, so he gets the prize. There's more of a kind of clipped quality to Colonel Ives. The tone of the voice is slightly different. I thought it was too much to go for an entirely different accent or an entirely different sound, because Colonel Ives is a maniac rather than a mimic. So it didn't seem right to me to go that far. But there is a kind of subtle change in the tone between the two characters. This scene really surprised me when I seen the movie. I've forgotten all about it. It's a great look for David here. We had a lot of fun with this scene actually. Just trying to get the timing absolutely right. This sequence coming up was, I think from a personal point of view, one of the most important ones in the film, because it tells you everything about the guy. This, it tells you everything about where he's been, and you get the truth of the character story here. It was very important to try and get this right. It was so cold this night, so cold, coldest night we had.
Morality, the last bastion of a coward.
The thing to notice in this scene for any students of acting is that when you have a night shoot, whenever things are filmed at night, the focus is very, very difficult. The depth of field that you have in the focus is very, very slight. So therefore the movements that you make as an actor have to be that much slower. Everything has to be paced down so that you're getting everything in focus and you're getting the shot right. That's really the trick of it, is you can combine the emotional with the technical. You've got a chance. A postscript to the cigar smoking is that when I went back to Britain after the film, so I'd been there for about 5 months, I went to the dentist and I had a slight hole at the back of my mouth, and she thought I'd burned my mouth, and I said, well, I've actually been smoking quite a lot of cigars, and she said, that's it.
and sort of burnt a hole in my mouth with the cigars, because you smoke them take after take after take. You see that one take and you see one cigar. That was probably about 25 cigars that night. So it's not very good for your health. I like the crucifix bobbing back and forward in the bottom left of the frame there. Yeah, another fine actor bites the dust. It's a lovely shot, a lovely wee piece of acting for Sheila there, the way she put her hand up. It's nice. Don't know if it's entirely clear what was going on there, really, the cut so quick, but he wipes the blood from Boyd's face and has a mini orgasm over it, basically. I always enjoy scenes in an actor when I've got lots of business to do, chopping stuff up or whatever. You can place the focus when you want to. When you love it, you move your head up away from the action, that really gives the focus over to what you're looking at. Must have tried about a dozen different ways of dragging that body past the door without it looking completely ridiculous, because it was a dummy, obviously. Then he cut Stephen's head off. I think this is Geoffrey Jones at his best in a scene like this. He's such a quirky actor. I thought I was dead. I remember. Is it a great warmth? As my life slipped away. This, I suppose, is the crux of what the film's all about, really. As far as Ives is concerned, and the comparisons with US expansionist policy at that time, and Ives totally justifying his action by saying that he's doing just exactly the same thing, really. It's very important for Antonio to get the stars and stripes in the middle of our two heads here, because again, as I was saying, this is really the crux of the film for her. The cut that's coming up here, of this, you'll be right as rain. When the camera goes from Geoffrey to Guy on the line civilized, I think is genius. I like this scene.
Eat to live. Don't live to eat.
This was actually a rather lovely stew that the caterers had cooked that day. It was I think it was just beef and pork and stuff, onions, carrots, potatoes. I could go without some of that right now. That's a beautifully disgusting moment, though.
Run away! Run for your lives!
Run for your lives, is it improvised by Geoffrey? This is where I get to be Clint Eastwood, if only once. This scene here between Guy and Geoffrey took a long, long time in rehearsal to get right. And my dressing room at Barrandov Studios in Prague was right next door to Guy's. And there was one day they were rehearsing this scene, and I'd never heard Geoffrey shout. I'd never heard him raise his voice. And towards the end of the sequences, you'll see he begins to shout. And I genuinely thought that Geoffrey and Guy were having a fight. I thought they were actually going to be punching one another out. I'd never heard the guy shout before. All this noise was coming from the next door, disturbing my lunchtime rest. That's Clint.
There we are. Breakfast, lunch, reinforcements.
All of these lines that I'm speaking there were done in a dub. There was never any lines up the top of the tower, but they just felt they needed me to be saying something up there. So these are add-ons. So this is the beginning of a fight sequence which goes on for quite some time. The first thing I remember in this is that first swipe that he had at me with a sword, he actually caught my thumb, which was very painful. So I just made it sound worse than it actually was, just to make Guy feel bad. But fight sequences in films are always very, very difficult things to do, always very risky, because unless you're actually getting stuck into somebody, doesn't it ever really look that real? People are always, you know, have accusations of things are they connecting, or you know, that punch wasn't right, and you think, well, what do you want me to do? Do you want the guy to punch my face in, you know? So myself and Guy and Antonia really took control of the fight sequence that you're about to see. And I'd always felt that fights, in my experience of having, you know, been around them and looked at them, they're always very messy and very dirty and very sore looking. So the most important thing for us was to try and make this look as painful as possible. Again, the crucifix and blood in the forehead was just, again, a kind of reference back to that crucifix dangling from his wrist. Again, it's the running theme for Ives throughout the whole film. I think the guy does see himself as being quite close to God in a strange way. Here we go. These are great headbutts. Well filmed. This has got to be, well, the bit after the action, actually, when he picks up the log. This bit with the log's got to be the sorest thing I think I've seen in film. Oh. Very tender moment here between Ives and Boyd in the middle of all of this. The kind of knowledge about each other, I think, kind of, they know what each other are about. We were struggling for a line here. And this was an improvised.
That was really sneaky.
I actually made myself laugh saying this. So it wasn't scripted at all, but it just needed something just to kind of, you know, let the audience laugh. One of the hardest decisions to make as an actor is whether you die with your eyes open or closed. A lot easier to die with your eyes closed. But if you can manage to not blink, it can be effective. There was a lot of debate about whether Slauson should actually taste the stew or not, but I think they made the right choice in the end. I think that he should. Go on, son. Go on, kiss him. It was quite tough in the Tartarus for a few months making this movie, but this sequence here, lying there in that bear trap, covered in blood, even though we look sweaty, that's glycerine. It's freezing cold. Covered in gallons of sticky blood. And that's what I call suffering, man. Antonio's original idea was to try and take the camera right out of the barn, so it went up into the sky at the end, but we couldn't quite manage that, so. But it's still a nice image. Thank you very much.